Hello and welcome to Exiled Eagles, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. This is the post-Brighton game special. Today we'll be talking all things Brighton, discuss the summer transfer window, and have part two of our Alan Smith interview. First, I just want to say, fucking get in, you beauty! Okay, so I'm sure everyone agrees with me. We got Dale. Hello, mate.
Hello.
Mark, how you going?
Good afternoon, I'm well.
And we've got Rob and Brady Seltzer. How are we getting on?
Brady's delighted with the win, as you can hear.
Well done, Brady. Get in, son. All right, so I guess before we talk about the game, Mark, yes. Give us a set of scene for what you're up to beforehand, because you had quite a long night.
It was a big day, mate, yeah. Had a vested interest in the... A-League game prior with Raw over in Perth. So that was a late start for the Raw game, 10 p.m. our time. So I got in there for that, mate, and the boys made hard work of that. Also managed a 3-1 win. So waiting on Western Sydney to bottle it this afternoon. Hopefully we'll get a spot in the six for the playoffs that we have here that Australia's mad for. Watched a bit of Broncos before that, mate, as a pep rally, so I was well lubricated by the time Palace kicked off. But I do remember I didn't have to watch the highlights or check the score. I remember it well. And
makes a welcome change.
Yeah, it was a good outing, mate. Yeah, we had a good turnout at the pub here, about 10 or 11 of us all up, and all but three had come from weddings or had been married.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, it seems to be the weekend for it. Jesus.
Must be.
Yeah. And were you happy with how the game went?
Yeah. Of course, after, 11 or 14 minutes when we're up 2-0, I thought, here we go. This could be a day out. And, do it with a leg in the air. And then, of course, Palace being Palace made it hard for ourselves. And, sort of a bit nail-biting towards the end there. But got the win, mate. So, yeah, very, very happy with the boys and just happy for the club and the supporters. And, happy that it was a bit better match than first time round down at Amex. That was absolute cack game. So, yeah, good to see a bit of a better football game.
It wasn't great, yeah. No, it was very enjoyable. I was actually very jealous of everyone at the game. The atmosphere looked rocking. Yep. Rob, what do you make of the performance?
Pretty much what everyone around all Paddy's fans would think. Like, the first 6 minutes were quite stunning. But like the first half, we battered them in the first half, really. I think we should have been up by more. And then the second half, I know I wrote in our WhatsApp group, I think it's a mental thing now with the late goals. And Christ alive, we tried. We tried to do it.
Oh, my God.
But no, we held out. Every Crystal Palace fan on planet Earth is now delighted. And you can't. We've played well and not got the points. We didn't play so well. We got the points, and I'll take that. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
and he made subs. Put that on record. He made subs.
Yeah, we cheered the first sub as much as we cheered the first goal. Dale, so talk to me about Wan-Bissaka and Joel Ward. How did you feel about that?
A shock at first, but a big shock, but kind of understood where it was coming from. You know, big derby or big rivalry, experienced Joel Ward, he understood it. But at the end of the day, Joel Ward was culpable for the second goal, for sure, on Isquiero. And my mate, Kieran, who you met in Singapore, texted me this morning saying he just re-looked at the goals. And Joel Ward was marking Murray for the first one. So he didn't stop Murray getting the hook in.
Right.
So, bit of a weird one, you know, because 3 or 4 years ago, everyone had gone, Joel Ward, Joel Ward, Joel Ward. Last year, people were 50-50. But I think now everyone wants Wan-Bissaka, don't they? You know?
Yeah, totally. Do you reckon Wan-Bissaka was dropped just because of his sort of slight mistake at Bournemouth, or just was it young player, big occasion?
I think it was young player, big occasion. It's been a massive 6 weeks for him. It's been huge. And I think Roy tried to protect him a little bit, evidenced by the fact he didn't bring him on. So regardless of what Joel Ward did or didn't do, he didn't bring him on. So I think he just tried to protect him from it. I don't think there's you can't punish Wan-Bissaka when you consider all the good he's done in the past six games, whatever. You can't punish him because it's one mistake, you know?
Yeah, one mistake, totally. I also feel like Wan-Bissaka probably wouldn't have made that mistake. I know hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I don't reckon he would have got beaten like Joel Ward did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was annoying. Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, Mark, I suppose we've got to talk about Wilf. Personally, I reckon that performance probably not only sealed him for player of the season this year, but he's got to be up there with our sort of best player ever, isn't it?
It was great, wasn't it? I was
obviously Dale don't agree.
So I mean, it had to be Wilf, wasn't it? That was I thought it was great what he came out with during the week, that little presser, and saying, you know, let's just clean him up and send him back to wherever they came from. And then boom, 5 minutes in, and you could see the joy on his face and everyone at the ground. So it was quite fitting that he got a brace there and a couple of lovely balls in from Luca as well. So yeah, made me laugh when he got the second and he went over to Benteke and gave him a hug. I don't know what he said, but it might have been something along the lines of, that's how you do it, Christian. It's easy. Put on the net, mate.
I would love it if it was.
And, so yeah, absolutely cracking, and we all know how much he hates Brighton, so it was just quite fitting that he banged those couple in, mate. And yeah, I think sort of hands down would have to be player of the season, even though there's been some other boys have put their hand up and been solid, I think, for all round out and out. It's Wilf, you know. So yeah, credit to him. Rose to the big occasion, as good players do.
Yeah, and Dale, do you want to have your 5 cents worth?
Well, look, I think
I feel
that
like
was
you're chomping at the bit there.
No, I'll be honest. Arguably one of the best games I've seen Wilf play. You know, the best. If you probably think about it, his best two games are probably Bournemouth in the second leg of the playoff. Brighton in the second leg of the playoff, and Brighton last night. He was magnificent, unplayable, superb. He even kept his temper when someone went through him at the end. He went to go and he was like, actually, no, I don't need to. But for me, I mean, I anointed
here
him
he comes.
Lord Luca. I anointed him Lord Luca last night. I thought he was magnificent. I mean, that ball, yes, Zaha's run for the second goal was great, but that ball was inch perfect. I mean,
superb.
You said it this morning as well, Tony, and what's that? He could have got sent off easily, but he adjusted his play. He was brilliant. I just thought he was magnificent last night. And James Tompkins, again, I think there's a little bit of division when this guy came to the club, but his passion for Palace is unbelievable. And I can't believe how much he's grown into being a Palace defender. He's brilliant. He's banging goals. He looks commanding. And yes, Wilf will win player of the season, hands down. I do not deny that. But if you're looking anywhere else, it's got to be Tompkins and Luca. They were brilliant.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, definitely more consistent. But doing it against Brighton on the regular is definitely going to win you over with Palace
100%.
Fans.
Yeah. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. And Rob, so I would say we have like a complicated relationship with our counterparts over here, the Seagulls down under. Probably one way to put it. Our sort of supporters clubs are kind of linked because of Renf, and I've got a few mates amongst them and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, I actually hate Brighton more since we've been hanging out with the Seagulls down under. how do you feel about it?
I'm gonna have to toe the exact same line there, Tone, to be pretty honest with you. Look, I don't have many mates amongst them, but yeah, because like they've come up and like they with the Renf game, they always have, you know, Paul Reed, Lloyd Owusu, they always have the ex-pros playing for them. They always seem to beat us by them, just them two alone, and we're always huffing and puffing and getting so close, and then we never get a pro, and then they always give it to us, and then they got up and it's like when we played and we were 7 without a goal and they were flying like comfortably mid-table, that it was like, oh my god, this couldn't be any worse. And now that we've beaten them, and then we've beaten them now, and you know they potentially could slide, it would be lovely to see them do, but
yeah, it's an extra bit of spice.
It does I think, because we're all so far away, and like you have to, right, that's it, I have to stand up for my football club no matter what. Now I'm on the other side of the world, watching it at 6 o'clock in the morning, so I have to stand up for the as if Steve Parish cares. He doesn't give a rat's ass. But we're like, no, we're defending the Palace for all it's worth, because we have to, because we can't get there on a weekend. So yeah, I agree.
Made it extra sweet. And so, Mark, do you reckon that's us safe now?
We'd have to be close. Obviously, mathematically, it is not. But given the run-in that pretty much everyone around us has, I just can't see us being overtaken by teams below us. And I certainly see us climbing the ladder probably a bit more before the end of the season. Obviously you want a few more in the bag, mate, but just nice to edge away from that horrible line of relegation and get a team or two buffer in between you. So I think, we keep current form and might get another win or two, maybe, point from Watford, beat West Brom and Stoke or something like that. But, yeah, you would think so. I'd say that the betting would have stretched more so with our recent result for us going down, and I think there's a lot of teams that have got a lot more to worry about than us. So, mate, if I had to have a punt, I'd say we're safe, but, it's not over till it's over.
Breathing a bit easier. Yeah. Totally. We've all been there before, as Dale keeps saying, Oldham.
Yeah, this is Palace we're talking about, mate, so, we'll see.
Exactly. Because, Dale, I mean, like, the fallout for relegation when you're over here, it's a lot bigger, isn't it? Because you're just sort of cut off completely you're not in the Premier League.
I made the change to getting an Optus phone 3 months ago. So, got rid of my contract and got a nice new shiny phone so I could watch Premier League. So those who overseas don't understand it. We have to watch it via essentially what is a phone network. You do internet and your mobile phone. We get relegated. My 2-year phone contract is now pointless. So, we don't get to
Should have thought about that.
Yeah, well, I know. I did that. I'm clever, aren't I? Genius. But yeah, we don't get that opportunity to watch Palace. At the moment, we can watch every game live. We lose that opportunity. We have to get down the pub for the 1 in 5 or 6 games you may be on. Unless you're flying at the top of the league, you won't be on. So that year we went up, it was great. We won a lot down the pub, weren't we? So we all went down and watched. But if you're not, what happens to you? I'm sure Sunderland fans in Australia seen their team get relegated and now they're down the bottom of the league, aren't getting to watch their team at all. Probably don't want to. But,
I was going to say, it's probably a blessing in disguise for them, isn't
it? Yeah. So, as you say, Tate, you just feel cut off from it all, don't you? You just lose that relationship with your team, which is hard enough when you live 24 hours away.
Yeah, totally. Cool. All right, well, let's finish part one there. Like Glenn Murray's hair, we'll miraculously return part two. So, see you then. Okay, and welcome back to Exiled Eagles, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. So, even though obviously we're all thinking about the Brighton game that's just happened, since our last podcast, we played Liverpool and Bournemouth. Rob, what did you think of those two games? Pretty frustrating.
Yeah, that's the word, isn't it? Frustration. I think that's probably the word of the season, I'd say. Liverpool, again, a late signal. We'd done everything right. We defended well. We'd earned the penalty. Everything's been said about the non-red card, and all that, and everything that went on with that. I'm not going to dwell on that too much. But at the end of the day, it's rank bad defending late in the game, and Flick to Bournemouth. We should have had that game signed, sealed, delivered. We don't take chances. It really comes across this season that whenever we've made a mistake at the back, teams have punished us. Whereas if other team make a mistake at the back, we don't seem to do it. We don't seem to punish them. Like the short back pass when Townsend got on, we didn't make anything from it. They overcommitted. Van Aanholt through. Good save by Begovic. We should have been 4. If we were 4-5-0 up at one stage in that game, they couldn't have complained. On the flip side, we could have been 3-0 down. But, we'd done the hard bit. It's 89th minute. Just put everyone in the box. Just stick 11 men in the box. Who gives it? We don't need anyone up front. Unfortunately, AWB switches off. Another late goal. Another points drop. But the performances are there. It's just those points. And you look at what Burnley are doing now. I don't see why we couldn't have been where Burnley are. To be brutally honest, with the squad we've got and the way we've played, that's, again, it's frustrating. So I think the word of the day is they're doing Sesame Street, which I watch quite often because I've got a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. The word of the day is frustrating.
Yeah. Oh, mate, I know it. And Dale, so basically since the last pod, we've had one game with Benteke, one game without Benteke, and then a game of two halves with Benteke. How do you feel about it? Like, are we better without him? I mean, I'm leaning towards a yes from what I've seen, but I personally thought we probably would have won the Bournemouth game if Benteke had played.
Yeah, correct. I think if we're going to be brutally honest with ourselves, with or without Benteke, the same thing keeps happening. We're not taking our chances. So, yeah. You know, and someone put on Facebook, if Benteke had 10 goals and Luka had 2, we'd be happy. Luka has 10, Benteke has 2. So it sort of balances itself out a little bit. As a team, I think we do look better without him at the moment, because last night against Brighton when he came on, we were firing balls at his head and he was trying to get the flick on. If he did, there was no one around him to get the flick on. So, but when we have Andros and Wilf up front, we play it to feet, we play it into channels, we probably run teams a little bit more ragged. So on the face of it, we look better about him. But as you say, Bournemouth, we win with him on. We brought him on last night to finish it off. You know, interesting for me, he didn't want to bring on Sorloth. He was probably the better runner and would take the ball into the corners. He'd rather bring on Benteke. Benteke almost sets up Wilf to make it 4-2. If he does that, everyone probably would say, oh, brilliant. Benteke's doing his job. As it is this morning on Facebook, people are absolutely laying into him. So, I don't know. I mean, I want us to keep him. I think he's a good striker. 17 goals for a relegation threatened side. Goals for Villa. He don't become a bad striker overnight. I think he's still got it in there. He just needs to work a bit harder.
Yeah, but do you play him against Watford?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm not sure if I agree with you or not. I'll decide after the Watford game.
I'm trying to think who they had at centre-backs, and I'm trying to think if they've got big lumps of centre-backs.
Yeah.
No, if they've got someone who's a bit more of a ball player, doesn't like the physical stuff, I'd say yes, you play him.
They've got Mariepa at the back, haven't they?
Mariepa yeah.
plays there.
Yeah.
He's so, pretty
if you stick him up against Mariepa, he'll beat him every time.
Every time. Yeah, that's yeah. it. He's almost becoming a horse for course, isn't he?
He's a £30 million, £120,000 a week horse for course. We can't believe
Good point.
Very true.
Okay, and looking forward, so a lot of players are out of contract. Let's just do a quick fire. Do they stay or do you let them go? So, Rob, Bakary Sakho.
Oh, no, that's the one, isn't it? That's the one. Before this season go, oh, Christ. This one is the only one I'll say. It depends who we've got in the pipeline. I'm hoping to God that we've been working hard since January or before January to get some people in, considering how shit January was. If we've got people in the pipeline to replace him, let him go. If not, we keep him.
Okay. I don't know what you think the definition of quickfire is, but... thanks.
That's the only one that... if you said any other one, I could have given you a yes or no. But him, you bastard.
Mark, yes. Jimmy Mack.
J-Mack is in my... Jim McCarthy, yeah, he's in my stay pile. I think he's... mate, I love the guy. He's just... industrious and just a workhorse in the middle there and just runs all day. You know, he's the type of dude who'll run through a brick wall for you. So I would definitely be keen to keep him.
Dale, what do you think of Martin Kelly?
Keep.
Yep. Okay. Rob, what about Wayne Hennessy?
Keep. Keep as a second or third choice.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
Yeah, agreed.
Mark, Joel Ward, what do you reckon?
This is like the Sakho one for him. Ward, I've got in between my stay and go and question marks. Given how he went last night, I'd say go. But you know, on his day and fit, possibly keep. But I'll probably sit on the fence like Robin. So you know who might be in the pipeline. Who get a hold of to replace him would probably be relevant to whether he stays or goes. But couldn't be too bothered either way, mate. So
either way,
yeah,
we'll see. I don't know why I'm even bothering asking this, Dale, but Chung Young Lee.
TV ratings in South Korea, mate. Keep him. Nah, go. Look, he's got to go. He's got to go, bless him.
Yeah. Damo, Rob, what do you reckon?
Alpha Vida scene.
Yeah, I think so too. Jules, Mark?
Yeah, great servant of the club and love what he's done over the years, but with his age, mate, just makes no sense to keep him. And, yeah, thanks very much for your efforts, Jules, but it's a no from me.
Okay, and Rob, sorry, Dale, this one I think is an interesting one. Johan, the money he's on.
Keep him. Yeah? Keep him. I've said it before, I really think he's a bit of a glue that makes us tick to a certain extent. He links the play so well. He's always up there at the top of the Premier League for interceptions. Keep him.
Right, okay. So you wouldn't sort of want to let him go and free up his wages, which would be quite high for someone younger that could play 90 minutes?
I don't think that money should really be an issue to a Premier League club of 6 years.
Yeah, you're quite right. And I agree, he's absolutely class. He really gets out some sticky situations.
Yeah, and you think, I know we're going to talk about the under-23s in a bit, but if you're thinking about bringing through some of these younger players at some stage, you've got a guy who's done it all in Johan, so he's got. I'll keep him around.
Maybe he's bringing through Erdal Rekip. Oh, no, he's on loan.
Let's not go down the Rekip road, eh? All right, so we've got a question from Brian on the BBS, which kind of relates to this. So he wants to know, rate your top five current players and your top five transfer targets. So, Mark, your top five current players.
My top five current players, in no particular order, but Wilf, obviously, Luca, Tompkins,
Lord Luca.
Jimmy Mack, and maybe controversially, I've got Bakary Sakho is my number five. Mainly for his form he showed when we needed it, basically.
Yeah,
he put his hand up and, really came good and banged in some crucial goals for us. Sadly got injured, got a thundering left boot on him, and I would have liked to see him run out the season, but didn't happen. But, he rounds out my current top five.
Right, and Rob, Dale, any players you want to add from there? I assume sort of most of those are the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably switch out Bakary Sakho, that top, and put Jules in there because he's still just, he might not be a first team starter, but the stuff he does around that club is and the legendary status is going to be in my top five.
Yeah, totally. I was listening to the 5-Year Plan podcast. And there's someone from the Palace for Life charity on there, and he said that Jules does loads of stuff for him. He's what an amazing dude.
Exactly.
Okay, and top five transfer targets. I don't know, Dale, you were sort of on top of this.
I think for me, it's not so much who the players are, it's where what positions we get. So a striker is a must.
Two.
Well, I think I'll go with that. I think another winger is a must because you need to cover for Wilf, and I am not so sure about Andros. I kind of say we probably need another right back. If we let go of Joel Ward and Martin Kelly looks more like a centre back now, you probably need someone to fight with Wan-Bissaka, and maybe a left back, depending on what we think about Van Aanholt and Schlupp, and goalkeeper sorted with Guita, whatever his name is. So I think it's more about the positions as opposed to the players. Let's be honest, we are not scouts, we're not football journalists, we can't go out there and tell you who's crash hot in whatever league, even though we did get it right about Mason Mount and...
I was going to say, you give it a bloody good crack most weeks.
I do. So I think for us it's more about where we get and where we strengthen. We don't necessarily need starters. We need people who are going to be able to come in and do a job for us when required.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Rob, you got anything to add to that?
No, I think hitting the head, I'd say two strikers, need a winger for sure. That's why I thought we were going to keep Balassi when we brought Townsend in. As Dale said, I'd have Townsend on the bench with a better winger, personally. We need a creative attacking midfielder in that 10 role. Just to link the play there, we don't seem to have anyone. And I'd say right back more than left back, but rather than going spunking 20 million on a starting right back, we go for a cheaper option to back up Wan-Bissaka. I think that's the big thing there. Rather than having Wan-Bissaka back up a £20 million right back, we can spend more money elsewhere and get a cheaper option in to cover him, would be my suggestion.
Yeah, about Ruben Loftus-Cheek, sorry. I mean, you mentioned a number 10. I actually thought that was one of his better games last night. I think he was, everyone knows, I think he's brilliant anyway. I thought last night he was great. He got the ball. He drove at players. Maybe he's that answer at number 10.
I'd love to, but I reckon.
Well, how much do you reckon he cost?
Yeah, exactly. From Chelsea, young Chelsea, England, Chelsea player, you're looking at 25 mil easy. Easy.
But
he's an important part of the team, you know, when he plays, when he's decent. My problem with him is if he loses the ball, he doesn't get it, doesn't like, you know, really try and get it back again. If you get a bit more aggression into his game, it'd be handy, you know.
Oh, he's a little bit Rolls Royce-y. He's a little bit of a Rolls Royce player, which, you know, I suppose if you're playing in the midfield alongside Jimmy Mack, Luca and Kabay, you can kind of get away with it.
It's true, exactly. You've got three terriers behind you. Yeah, totally.
For sure.
I guess we've got to say a big congratulations to the under-23 side who took out the title. So that's excellent, very encouraging. We've got some good players coming through. Mark, Racket. Do you reckon once we're safe, we'll see any of those players get a run out?
Yeah, well, we had Daly come out of that squad and made a spot on the bench for the game last week. I thought it might have been interesting if we had wrapped that game up like we could have and should have. We might have seen him get a bit of a run. That didn't happen, but would be good for him to be around the senior guys and get some, you know, sort of first-team experience as such, being around the squad. Another couple of guys out of that squad, I know a few of them travelled up to Hong Kong, Lakilo and Kirby. I think if we get to safety with a couple of games to go, I'd definitely like to see him out and have a run. Whether that will happen or not, and the way Roy is with subs and that sort of thing, maybe not. But I think if we become mathematically safe, it'd almost be silly not to reward a few of those shining lights with a run in the first team.
Yeah, it'd be good to see. I guess it all depends on how West Brom and Stoke are tracking and whether they're still in a sort of relegation battle, whether we can, you know, play the kids or whether that's really going to affect things in the league. So,
yeah,
we shall see.
Would be good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that's the end of part two. Part three, we have part two of our Alan Smith interview, which Dale and I recorded a few months ago. He's got some interesting things to say, so look forward to that. Hello and welcome back to Exiled Eagles. Dale and I are very lucky to be sat here with two-time Palace manager, Alan Smith. So like you said, we've had a promotion season, two cup semi-finals, relegated on 48 points, was it? Oh, yeah, unbelievable.
One of the worst days of my football life. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind admitting I cried. Well, I think one of the worst days that I could compare with that was also when we got relegated at Arsenal when Steve was the manager.
Oh, that was
we were pretty certain we were safe. We beat West Ham and we were safe, and then we went over and it was ridiculous. Oldham really had no chance of catching us, and I remember being at that game, we got hammered at Highbury, and I kept on hearing the Oldham result come through and I just couldn't believe it, and that I found very upsetting. And Steve then decided it would be best if he resigned. He thought he'd done enough at the club. He needed to do something else. But that was very upsetting. And, the day that we got relegated again from 48 points and 2-2 was just unbelievable, really. Especially as four teams went down.
Yeah, I know.
You know, that was... I don't think, if I'm honest with myself, I ever sort of quite recovered from that. It was a bit too much for me to take, you know. Right. It was 10 years' work, and the thought of getting relegated on that, I don't think looking back, I could have probably coped with it a little bit better than I did.
Shame, yeah, that was a shame. So, real sort of great team that first spell. The second spell, your manager, a little bit trickier. What was the main difference?
Well, the big difference was in the first time, as I say, I keep referring back to it, I'd been there 7 years when I became the manager, so I knew exactly how things ran. Steve had left some good players. I mean, we had Nigel Martin still, we had Eric Young, and we had good young... But when I went back, I mean, I only got called in for the job 2 weeks before the season started, and Palace had a disastrous pre-season. They'd lost to Crawley, they'd lost to somebody else, and I came in at the start of the 2 weeks to go, didn't really have a settler's squad. Simon Jordan was the chairman. I hadn't met him before, so whereas Ron, I had a relationship, whether it was good, bad or indifferent, I had one. With Simon, I'd never met before. We'd signed a couple of young players from Arsenal, Tommy Black,
Julian Gray. Yeah.
And just the whole balance of the team wasn't really right. And I think Steve, Coppell had been the manager just before, and he said to me, well, look, I think you're crazy to take this. But, you know, I felt there was, as you said to me earlier, it was a little bit of unfinished business that I wanted to do. Again, on hindsight, they do say never go back. But it was a difficult start for us. I mean, our first away game after being 2 weeks in the job was to Graham Souness, who was at the time manager of Blackburn. We lost that 2-0. So we always seemed to be on the back foot a little bit.
And how was it working for Simon Jordan?
Well, he was just totally different to anybody I ever met. You know, he was 30 years old. He just sold his business for 70 million. He was brash. He was confrontational. And, you know, a lot of the time, you know, I felt I was trying to sort of manage him as much as I was managing the team. So it was certainly different. And I've never met anybody like him since. Although I do, you know, give credit where it's due. I think he mellowed a little bit. You know, he had 7 different managers during his time at Palace. It's quite funny when we all get together, we've all got so many stories, you know. You know, we can keep everybody going. But I think by the time he got round to, you know, having his latter managers, he'd calmed down a little bit, and, you know, he had a better relationship.
That's how funny, 17 million. Man, that in today's market doesn't even get you a Penteke's right foot.
No, exactly. It's crazy.
Nice one, I think, for us as we're coming towards the end here. Who was your favourite player to work with?
Well, I had so many, I have to say that. I mean, that championship team I had, I loved every one of those players. They were brilliant. They were young. They were enthusiastic. But Ian Wright sticks out to me because he just won games for us we shouldn't have won. That partnership he had with Bright was just very, very special. I mean, it was just made. They were completely different in attitude. Brighty was more laid back, had been around a little bit more, and he taught Ian so much. But, you know, I've got to put him top of my list. But then if I also go down, I mean, Nigel Martin, again, was exceptional. You know, just got on with the job.
£1 million goalkeeper.
First million, again, that was...
Yeah. Rovers, was it?
And that, Bristol Rovers.
Yeah.
But that was a brave thing for Steve Coppell and Ron Nodes to do. It happened just after the 9-0 defeat at Liverpool. And to bring somebody in for £1 million was unbelievable. Even for me, when he was my goalkeeper in the championship year, he was exceptional. So, but I think we were very lucky in what we had. Jeff Thomas, Pemberton, we talked about. Andy Gray was a very good player for us. You know, he doesn't often get mentioned, Andy, but he did so many things. And then we had Sulakos and Shores coming through the youth team. So I can't think in my whole period at Palace, I couldn't really turn around outside one player, which I'm not going to go into, which was on my second period, that I thought really wasn't a really decent guy.
Right, okay. We'll find out that when we turn the mics off. And have you got any sort of particular favourite Palace memory?
Oh, too many to mention. I mean, you know, for me, the 4-3 win when we beat Liverpool was just incredible when I was the assistant manager. The cup final, 3-3 when Ian Wright came on, that sticks out in my mind. Also, again, when I was the manager, the cup semi-finals, losing to Liverpool and Manchester United, and winning the championship up at Middlesbrough, I think that was probably my proudest moment. So there's lots of good highlights. I know we joked about some of the stories we came on air, but you tend to sort of pick out the bad things, but in truthfulness, there were so many good memories and happy memories. Yeah, it was just a fantastic period in my life, really.
And are you still involved in the game at all, or sort of what do you do now?
No, I do. I set coaching programs for in Kenya, which I've been doing. I advise quite a lot of people who come to me, and I do it in confidence. And I, one of the things I'm quite good at is, you know, I'm quite happy not to be up front. I'm quite happy to go under the radar. And when I'm not in Australia and enjoying the place here, I'm, you know, quite involved in football, but doing it in a quiet way that sort of suits me and my lifestyle, really.
Great. Any other questions?
No, I'm just happy that I've got to meet a legend.
Yeah,
in my eyes.
Absolutely.
No, honestly, it's been great meeting the two of you, especially in the gym, Dale, when I saw you working so hard. And now I was really impressed with that. But it's been really great. And I follow it on Twitter. It's quite interesting, you know, on the Palace side.
Yeah, and we just really appreciate you giving up your time to come and meet us, mate. It's like the second time we've met up, and like, it's great just hearing Palace stories.
And this time we've had your dad with us.
Yeah, exactly. Made it even better.
He
made
it up, I've got a little stubby holder.
I've got my stubby holder, and Dale, you know that because I'm just trying to keep off the beer.
Sorry.
Trust me, I'm going to christen it this weekend.
All right, nice one. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks,
cheers.
Alan.
So that was part three of the Alan Smith interview, Dale and I did. It was great meeting him, and look forward to catching up with him again. He's a really decent bloke. So that's it for Exiled Eagles. We're going to go and carry on celebrating the Brighton result. Hope you all do too. All right, take it easy. Bye.